I want this picture to be a commentary on modern conditions, stark realism, the problems that confront the average man.
But with a little sex.
I love the screaming chess.
You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing or interesting.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order. Everything becomes chaos.
There was madness in any direction, at any hour. Strike sparks anywhere.
There are no nations. There are no peoples. There are no Russians. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West.
Okay, the Attorney General says there's too much violence on TV, and that should stop. But even if you took out all the violent shows, you could still see the news.
Thank you.
Yes. You're on Screening Jets with Pete Castaldi, and Twin Peaks is back. So tonight, we're going to be featuring Angelo Badalamenti, who composed the music for both series, or all three, the original first two, and the new one, and also worked with David Lynch on a number of his films, including Wild at Heart, Mulholland Drive, Lost Highway, and Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me, the prequel to what is about to hit our screens again on Stan. We'll also hear a little bit from Mr. Lynch himself in a conversation he had last year with David Stratton when the Queensland Modern Art Gallery ran a retrospective of all of his films, some of his music, some of his art, and it's quite a fantastic conversation. It is all up on YouTube too if you want to watch it yourself. The two Davids, as Stratton introduced it, but there's some nice little bits I thought I'd pull out from that so that we could have a listen. And also David Stratton himself, his documentary A Cinematic Life, or David Stratton A Cinematic Life about David Stratton, is currently screening in Cannes at the Cannes Film Festival, and there's a wonderful irony about that, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. This piece of music is Dark Spanish Symphony from Wild at Heart. You're with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets, kind of celebrating the return of Twin Peaks, which hits our television screens tomorrow from 2 p.m. We're going day, date and hour with the US release. Angelo Badalamenti, our featured composer this evening, for reasons I've already explained, but if you've just dropped in, Twin Peaks hits our screens again tomorrow. So I thought I'd play as many pieces of music as I possibly could in the Screening Jets Hour from Angelo Badalamenti. This is from a great film called The Comfort of Strangers. The track is The Other Side of the Mirror. And coming up, a little bit of Mr. Lynch himself.
Thank you.
from this soundtrack To the Comfort of Strangers, which was directed by Paul Schrader, himself a great American director, from a novel by Ian McEwan, a screenplay by Harold Pinter. If you've never seen it, find it. Great cast: Christopher Walken, Rupert Everett, Natasha Richardson. And there's an interesting story about how Angelo Badalamenti actually met David Lynch. It was on the set of Blue Velvet, and Lynch was having trouble getting Isabella Rossellini to sing. She's not a singer, she's a great actor, but if you've seen the film, you'll know that she has to sing. If you haven't seen the film, time to watch it. Badalamenti was brought in, was actually recommended to Lynch to help train Isabella Rossellini to sing. And so a great partnership was formed between an amazing director and an amazing composer. Coming up, a little bit of Mr. Lynch himself. As I mentioned last year, Quagoma, the Museum of Modern Art in Brisbane, had a fantastic retrospective of David Lynch's films, some of his music, some of his art, and as part of that exhibition and gathering around Mr. Lynch, he was interviewed in a quite fabulous Q&A by David Stratton. And as I said, it's all up on YouTube if you want to watch it. But I thought I'd take a couple of snips out of that, of the conversation between Mr. Lynch and Mr. Stratton.
There was a fantastic universal sense that wherever we were doing it, right, that we were winning. And that, I think, was the handle.
David Lynch was really the first filmmaker to make television.
David Lynch brought not just the auteur theory to TV, but he brought a framing style and a cinematic style that didn't exist before.
It felt like watching a movie, but a movie that just kind of went on for hours and hours.
I see it as a film. Instead of going on a truck to a theater, it goes on a truck to the TV.
Oh, Andy.
Oh, Punky.
I'm pregnant.
We are all human beings, and the human being is a glorious being. And even though it might not be taught in school, each and every one of us human beings has a field within us, a treasury within us. And this treasury is known by many names, but it's like an ocean of pure consciousness, pure bliss. Unbounded this field is. Unbounded, infinite, eternal, immutable, immortal consciousness. And this field in Vedic language is called Nitya and Aparashaya, meaning eternal and uncreated. No one created this field. It's always and forever been there. It's there right now, and it will be there forever. And this consciousness, pure consciousness, has qualities. So within each and every one of us is unbounded intelligence, unbounded creativity, bliss, happiness, love, energy, and peace. And we're living on the surface, but deep within is this treasury, pure consciousness, modern science's unified field, the kingdom of heaven which lies within, the absolute, many names. And once any human being experiences that, transcends and experiences that, they infuse some, they grow in that, they truly begin to expand whatever consciousness they had to begin with. And the side effect of expanding consciousness and these all positive qualities is negativity begins to recede. Such a freedom this brings. So I say it's like gold coming in from within and garbage going out.
So until mankind is peaceful enough not to have violence on the news, there's no point in taking out of shows that need it for entertainment value. I love the screaming chess.
David Lynch. Talking with David Stratton. We didn't hear much of David Stratton. We only heard David Lynch, but that's a little kind of taster of the mind of David Lynch, the creator of Twin Peaks, amongst many other great experiences. This is Jitterbug from the soundtrack to Mulholland Drive, as composed by Angelo Badalamenti, who is our feature composer for this evening. And Lynch really did, when he did Twin Peaks, kind of shift the gear of what was being made for television. And he did actually have a resounding and continuous effect on what sort of television was made. And we're now kind of living in the dreamscape of that, I suppose, with all of this magnificent long-form television coming out. If you've never seen the first two seasons, made in 1990 and 1991, and also the prequel to the two in the feature film Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, then I suggest before you start diving into the Stan reissue or the Stan season three or the new season, it might be worth your while checking out seasons one and two. And the interesting thing about those as well is that in the new season, I suppose you could call it a new season, the new iteration of Twin Peaks by David Lynch, he directs all 18 episodes, which is very, very unusual in long-form television. And in fact, in the first two seasons, he directed only six and had a really interesting range of other directors working on the other 24 episodes, people including Leslie Linka-Glatter, Todd Holland, Mark Frost, who was also the co-creator, Uli Udell, James Foley, Stephen Gyllenhaal, Diane Keaton. And in the new season, well, I'm just going to call it season three, he and Mark Frost have written all of the episodes, and in the first one and two, they share writing credits with about seven or eight other writers. So in some ways, they set the tone with the first one and two, seasons one and two, not only in style and content and story, and multiple directors working across very unusual television. And they've kind of turned it on their head. If you go behind the camera, to have one director of 18 episodes is very, very unusual. And like many other people, I'm really looking forward to watching 18 hours of David Lynch directing, because I've always been a big fan. This is Rose's theme from The Straight Story, and probably little seen David Lynch film. A great story about an old guy who hops on one of those, you know, kind of ride-on mowers and drives across country to re-establish a friendship with an old, old friend. Quite a beautiful film. Thank you. kind of interesting to note too, don't you think, the vast difference between styles, even in between Lynch films, the different styles that Badalamenti has come up with. Some very classic and traditional, and then the synth-driven tones of the work he did with Julie Cruz, who he had worked for a long time with prior to her taking the theme song to the first Twin Peaks, which you heard at the head of the show. Rose's Theme from The Straight Story, directed by David Lynch, score by Angelo Badalamenti. Snippet from Cousins, another Badalamenti score. But I think my favourite Badalamentis are always the ones that sound more like all of the work he did for Lynch more than anyone else. The stuff that sounds like this. The stuff that really brings back all those memories. And if, like me, you saw it when it first went to air, or watched it on VHS, this theme, Laura's theme, Laura Palmer's theme, kind of never leaves your head. It's just one of those pieces of music. The instant you hear it, you know exactly what it is. And then all those images start rushing back. You are with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets, 2SER 107.3 and Mixcloud. And tonight we're playing sort of homage to Angelo Badalamenti, who was responsible for many of the scores of almost all of David Lynch's films. He didn't do Eraserhead. He didn't do Elephant Man. They met on the set of Blue Velvet, and from then on, Badalamenti has scored almost all of David Lynch's films, including his shorts, of which there are many. David Lynch is a prolific artist, musician, filmmaker. And we will hear a little bit of more of Mr. Lynch in his conversation with David Stratton from last year's retrospective at Quaggoma, Queensland Gallery of Modern Art. But now we're actually going to head into Mr. David Stratton himself. Now, anyone who goes to the movies knows Stratton. He's long-running two television shows, first on SBS and then on ABC, At the Movies and The Movie Show. The Movie Show on SBS and At the Movies on ABC. Kept people, in many strange ways, on the edge of their seats. The relationship between Stratton and Pomerantz was always entertaining. But he was also a great film critic, a true film critic. Not only did he work in television, he also, for quite a long time, wrote for Variety, one of the major international trade magazines. He also wrote, and I think maybe still writes for, The Australian, a national newspaper. And when he was at his peak, he was probably one of the most powerful film critics in the world because of his listenership, viewership and readership. He was very, very important to anyone who was releasing a film in Australia. Everyone wanted Stratton to review it, to see the film. And he, because he started his life in the film industry as the director of the Sydney Film Festival, he had an extraordinary knowledge of film. So when he sat to write about them, talk about them and share his thoughts, they were always well considered, well measured, articulate and very intelligent. And he was for a long, long time, and still is, a huge supporter of the Australian film industry and Australian filmmakers. Now, I didn't always agree with him in his sometimes savage appraisal of Australian films, but he was, to his mind, always very honest, and honesty was always the best policy, particularly when dealing with your own national cinema. He would travel to all of the major international festivals, so Venice, Berlin, Cannes, Toronto, Sundance, I think, on occasion, but he spent most of his life inside cinemas, and that passion for film began when he was a very, very young boy growing up during the Second World War in the UK. And that's one of the many wonderful things that's revealed in this documentary about David Stratton, A Cinematic Life, which had a small run in cinemas around Australia. It might still be popping up. I'm sure that it's not far from its digital release for home entertainment. And I'm sure it's probably not far away from a television screening as well. But it's quite a beautiful little documentary, very well made. Directed by Sally Aitken. I didn't think that I would kind of sit down, and having known Stratton for a long, long time, having admired him and respected him, he gave me a kind of kick up in my early career as a radio journalist working at Triple J and the ABC. I've always enjoyed what he's had to say, but always thought, if saw him as a very private man. I never knew much about his history, his, you know, private life. Not that the film gets extensively into his private life, but it does reveal a kind of charming story about how he came into it. And it certainly reveals his true and strong passion for film, in particular Australian film. And as I mentioned, it's currently screening at the Cannes Film Festival, which I found kind of funny, and that's where I started the conversation with David, because if you go to any of these festivals, it's a giant junket. You're sitting on one side of a television camera pointing at some movie star, and you get your 5 minutes with them, and you do that 10 or 11 times a day. And Stratton has been doing that for a whole lot longer than I have, and that would have been grist to his mill for many, many years. And now all of a sudden, it's him on the other side of the camera.
It is the international system of currency which determines the totality of life on this planet.
I love the screaming chess.
I'm kind of, I don't know, quietly amused by you being on the other side of the junket.
Yes, I know, it's strange, isn't it?
When the lights would dim and the curtains would open, there was something magical about it.
Priscilla, queen of the desert.
Place your bets, gents.
You're terrible, Muriel.
Two beers, all right? One for me, one for me, mate.
He's a cinephile.
A film escapist.
He has an encyclopedic knowledge of cinema.
He has seen more films than I think anyone else I know.
Some people's hobby was collecting stamps. Mine was collecting movies.
I was an outsider in my own family, a black sheep who loved movies. My brother and I were expected to carry on the family tradition. All I could think about was my passion for cinema.
Living at home with our parents was proving pretty difficult for him.
I came to live in Australia. When I made that decision, I was burning my bridges.
Now, look, I have to say right at the very beginning that I've been aware of you and I've known you for a long, long time, and you have a very visible public persona. And you've always struck me behind that as a very private person. But here we have David Stratton revealing quite a lot about yourself that to me is very, very personal. Was that a tough call for you?
Well, yes and no. I thought it was interesting when the director of this documentary, Sally Aitken, wanted to go in this direction. And I put obviously some barriers for her. I didn't want to go in certain directions, so it's not completely revelatory at all. It's going back really to my relationship with my parents and my brother, not beyond that.
But you still have to, you know, kind of be comfortable with it, and in many ways for me it actually gives a kind of really gentle insight into someone who I've always respected. So good on you for going there.
Well, thank you. I mean, look, we had a lovely crew, and they made it. I mean, it's beautifully shot, this film, by Kevin Scott. And it was all done in a very sort of intimate kind of way, and they made it very easy for me.
So you're giving it 5 stars?
No, I don't think I'd better score it.
My father was beside himself with fury.
I feel sad about that.
How long have you been in Australia, mate?
Here is the story of my career.
When I started championing Australian cinema, I didn't realise it would be the turning point of my life.
The film goes right back to your, and this I love, your first film review, which I think you wrote and you kept within your extraordinary filing system when you were 6 or 7. So can you pinpoint exactly what it was that drew you to the cinema, to film, to that experience?
Well, I grew up in England during the war, and my father was in the British Army, so he was fighting in Burma, and my mother was volunteering for the Red Cross, and I was cared for by my mother's mother, my grandmother. And she was that avid moviegoer, and the small town where we lived, believe it or not, it was quite a small town, had 3 cinemas, one of which changed its program midweek. And my grandmother used to take me to the matinee every day. So 4 days a week, we'd go down the hill into the town, and we'd go to a movie, and then we'd walk up the hill afterwards. And sometimes my mother would say to my grandmother, "You didn't take him to that, did you?" Because my grandmother was completely indiscriminate. We just went, and I mean, I suppose some people would call it irresponsible, but I loved it. It was just, from a very, very early age, I was just hooked in this thing, and I just loved the atmosphere of the cinema, the smell of the cinema, the you know, it was a different era, of course. And it was the added problem, of course, in those days with the war on, that you might get bombed any minute. So then my father came home from the war happily, and all that changed, and suddenly I wasn't able to see films anymore, except the ones that my parents sort of approved of. And The Overlanders, I think, was about the first of those. I remember being reading a review of the film in a newspaper. And so I just thought, well, I'll write my thoughts about it, which were pretty basic, as you can imagine.
And so your life as a reviewer began, but at what point did you really have confidence that you could do this professionally? At what point did you realise that, you know, the love of cinema and film would become your life?
I guess it was the Sydney Film Festival, when I was basically asked if I would take over the festival. I'd come to Australia for supposedly 2 years, and because I was expecting to be working for my father in the grocery trade, I got a job in that area, in grocery in Sydney. But at the same time, of course, I was seeing all the new movies, and I was going to the Sydney Film Festival when it came around. Actually, I went as an usher because I couldn't afford the tickets. And but I had cause to complain to the festival committee about an aspect of the festival, which is a very long story. It's the whole censorship thing, because they showed some films which were clearly censored, because I'd seen them in London before coming to Australia, and I could see that there were things that had been cut, which the festival audience had not been made aware of. So the festival board's reaction was to invite me to be on, to stand for the board. I was elected to the board. I put up a motion that the festival should challenge the government on censorship and various other provocative things. The motion, I think, passed by one vote. I was about to go back to England. Literally, I was a month away from... I'd already got my ticket to sail to go back to England. But at my final board meeting of the festival, the festival director resigned because he said he couldn't possibly implement the decision that had been made at the previous meeting. And that left the festival in a lurch, really. And they asked me to take over. So... that's when I wasn't sure that I could do it, but no, that's not true. I was very sure I could do it. I was quite arrogant, I think, probably, to convinced that I could turn it into an international festival of world class. That was my vow to myself, and I think we did a fairly good job.
Being an outsider is an enduring theme in Australian cinema. Tales of the struggle we all face to fit in and belong. I feel a deep affection for Australian films. They are, in a way, the movies that made me.
There you go, David Stratton, director, one-time director of the Sydney Film Festival, was going to be a grocer. I love that. If you can find it, watch it. David Stratton, A Cinematic Life. And he also has been for many, many years doing the 100 Years of Cinema. It's part of a lecture course through continuing education at Sydney University, and apparently it's fantastic. I've never attended, but it would be a thing to do. I think maybe that's a bucket list thing to do. Still to come, a little bit more of Mr. Lynch and Mr. Stratton, the two Davids, to get us there. Angelo Badalamenti from Lost Highway. The track is Police.
How about a nice musical? How can you talk about musicals at a time like this with the world committing suicide, with corpses piling up in the street?
I love the screaming chest.
A dead girl. This was what got us going, me and Mark.
The question of who killed Laura Palmer resonated around the world.
In 1990, there was nothing on television. It was a desert.
Entering the town of Twin Peaks.
The pilot aired, and it became a little bit of a sensation.
The show was both dangerous and exhilarating.
Culturally, it was a game changer.
You can't watch television right now without seeing the imprint of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about.
You said once the best thing in the world is creating. So how do you begin the creative process?
I say the best thing in the world is ideas. And none of us do anything without an idea. Even if it's you look in the cupboard and there's no coffee, you get an idea to go to the store and get some coffee. So there's ideas for everything. And I love to try to catch ideas and catch an idea that I fall in love with. And then I know exactly what to do. Stay true to that idea, translate it to one medium or another.
Stay true, but how difficult is it to stay true when you create?
It's not really difficult. When you catch an idea, you see it in your mind's eye, and you feel it, and you can hear it. And then you write that idea down on a piece of paper. And you write it down in such a way that when you read it, the idea comes back in full. And you hold this idea in your mind, and you stay true to that, and it guides you through the process.
You're an artist who has merged film, television, music, design, animation. Do you think art should be without borders, without pigeonholes?
Yes. There's a thing called freedom, and it's very, very important. Free to think anything and do anything. Every human being has a line they won't cross, but it's a different place for each of us. But you need to have freedom do your work. Any restrictions is a sadness, and it can kill creativity.
You can ask it now.
Is it a police procedural? Yes. Is it a soap opera? Yes. Is it this sort of avant-garde, surrealist, psychosexual stream of consciousness? Yes. It's all of these things and more.
It was this freedom that Lynch seemed to have to explore these characters in a different way that you don't ever see on television.
Are you using drugs, Bobby?
Nope. Alcohol.
Alcohol's a drug.
Twin Peaks basically proved that there wasn't just one way to make television.
Somehow, Lynch was able to plant a flag and say we can make weird creative art in the most mainstream places of all, primetime television on a major network. It just made no sense.
Oh, and you know the thing about chaos? It's beer.
I love the screaming chest.
David Lynch, in conversation with David Stratton last year at the Queensland Museum of Modern Art. As I said, the whole thing's up on YouTube. I recommend it. But I will probably pull some more snips because there's more to be said about Twin Peaks. The new Twin Peaks, which arrives on our screens tomorrow from 2 p.m. on Stan. If you haven't seen the other 30 episodes and one feature film that precede it, you've got some homework to do. But I'm assuming it's going to be sitting there for quite some time, so you'll have plenty of time to watch it. You're with Pete Castaldi on Screening Jets, 2SER 1073 and Mixcloud. The Pink Room, from the prequel to Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, and of course, Angelo Badalamenti, the composer. Angelo Badalamenti, our featured composer for Screening Jets this evening, as I wind my way out of the studio. That track was from Fire Walk With Me. This is also from Fire Walk With Me. A real indication. It's been great to be with you. I'm going to get out of here and leave you in the very capable hands of the wonderful Gail Austin and the Curvy Crew, who will take you to places you never knew existed, as they always do, from all known universes. Next week on Screening Jets? I'm not quite sure. I don't know. I think I will finally have to get Robert Iolini in, who's an amazing Australian artist based in Kyoto, doing really interesting things. I'm sure I'm going to have to dig him up. Otherwise, Sydney Film Festival is heading in our direction very, very quickly. And as per usual, all the great sessions are selling out very, very early. So I might have a quick squiz through the program and tell you what I think could be worth seeing. Definitely the opening night film. Definitely. Warwick Thornton's documentary. That'll be something special. But as per usual, the program is jam-packed with fantastic stuff. And then what else is going on? Look, there's so much being made at the moment. Starting From Now is not being made, but boy, as a web series, it's popping up all over the place and winning prizes all over the place. So maybe we'll revisit that. Who knows? I'll surprise you. That's probably the best thing to do. You have been with me, Pete Castaldi, on Screening Jets, 2SER 107.3 and Mixcloud. Thanks for your time. I'll see you next week. Have a good one. From the man himself, David Lynch sings. Ghost of Love. Thank you.
Getting off this merry-go-round. I love the screaming chest.